You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 178 in Steiner's Collected Works, a cycle of lectures entitled Secret Brotherhoods and the Mystery of the Human Double. This is the fourth lecture given in Zurich on the 13th of November, 1917, entitled Behind the Scenes of External Events, Part 2. In the lecture I gave here a week ago, I wanted to broach a subject that so much needs to be discussed, a subject that the present tragic events in human life are forcing us to face, a subject that could be defined briefly with the words, humanity urgently needs to find its way once more to knowledge and awareness of how what takes place here in the world on the physical plane is linked with a concrete spiritual world. Humanity urgently needs to become aware that a spiritual world is working down into every detail of existence in the physical world. It has to be said that, especially in our time, one must be aware of the need for consciousness of this to spread amongst humanity. As regards external physical appearance, present-day people are not very different from the human beings who lived in the past ages, about which history is ordinarily concerned. Parenthesis, ordinary historical research does not really go back further than at most about the third post-Atlantean age. What preceded that is only vaguely described by historians, but these vague descriptions are the only ones which people today are prepared to consider. Close parenthesis. However, in their soul life, human beings have changed a very great deal over the course of time since then, even though it cannot be said that external physical life or the physical organism has changed all that much. So people do not notice, or are not eager to notice, what is actually happening, what is going on out of impulses coming from the spiritual world. In fact, we are living in momentous times. By this I am not referring to the silly remark, usually clothed in the words, we are living in a time of transition. Of course we are, for every time is a time of transition. But the important thing is to know what it is that is making a transition. Whatever it is that is making a transition in our time, whatever is taking on new forms and undergoing important transformations, this is something of which we become aware when we are able to turn our attention not only to the lives of beings and creatures who go about here on the earth in physical bodies, but also to beings who do not belong to the physical world, including, of course, human beings who have died. In the world that human beings pass through between death and a new birth, one can notice great transformations, and those taking place just now are profoundly far-reaching. But people today are not at all eager to give serious consideration to matters of the spiritual world, and the fact that they do not take this at all seriously can lead for us to very special feelings when we think of how what we call anthroposophy is coming into being. In order to want to represent the ideas that are put forward by the anthroposophical movement, there is no need to feel any particular preference for them. This is different in other movements. And how many movements there are, and associations as well, all of which are convinced that what they want to present to the world is the most essential and necessary thing. The people in all those associations and movements are subjectively fanatical about their movement. They are prejudiced in favor of their program, and they consider their program to be the source of great bliss and an absolute necessity. But there is no need to be prejudiced in this way in favor of the anthroposophical movement, for the impulse to represent it can derive from something quite different. To put it briefly, which is so often necessary for us because we can have so little time together, I would say it like this. Having become convinced of the truth of anthroposophical ideas, what then impels us to do all we can to spread the ideas is our sympathy for the people of today who need these ideas. And these people are, actually, almost all those whom we meet. We are impelled by our sympathy for people who must have these ideas and who are doomed to take terrible things upon themselves if they do not have them. Last time, I endeavored to give you a picture of how things that are incomprehensible on the physical plane become comprehensible when they can be explained in the context of the spiritual world. Today I want to bring forward a number of other important points, which at first sight will appear to come from quite another direction. So, let us begin with something we encounter wherever we go. In many quarters, though it is regarded as a sign of a special religious enlightenment if one rejects ideas such as those which we have about what is encountered as soon as one steps across the threshold to the spiritual world, namely that there one is involved with many spiritual beings, with whole hierarchies of spiritual beings, angeloi, archangeloi, and so on, upward. Instead, it is regarded as a sign of special religious enlightenment if one merely reflects on what is called the one God, with whom one seeks to have as intimate and as direct a relationship as possible. This is regarded as the only possible monotheism, and some people are horrified to be told about teachings that speak of a multiplicity of spiritual beings. Let us be clear about what this means. When a person's only relationship with the spiritual world is the one that is regarded today in religious circles as the usual one, the one cultivated by a church that fancies itself as enlightened, then that person only has a specific relationship with the spiritual world, a relationship which, although it is one of feeling, only concerns the protecting angelos, the angel being with whom he does have a real relationship. And such a person then refers to that angel being, the only being he can relate to and have certain feelings for, as his God. If he is a Christian, he calls this angel being Christ. He mistakes the angel being for Christ. It is perhaps difficult to imagine this, but it is so. Protestant theologians who fancy themselves to be enlightened warn strongly against polytheism, so that people should gain a direct relationship with the one being, Christ. But however much they talk to people about Christ, what they are saying about Christ refers solely to the individual's relationship with his own angel being. Thus in our time monotheism is in danger of becoming the worship by each human being of his own individual angel. There is much that people do not yet want to admit, even though it lives among them as a reality. The objective observer, meanwhile, can see how they are beginning to develop all kinds of rather disastrous ideas and feelings out of such illusions. Because people each pray to their own angel, they each have their own God, while erroneously believing that they share their God with the others. In fact, the monotheists of today each pray only to their own angel. But as the words resound together, which each is speaking to his own angel, in an egoistic relationship with his own angel being, they think that they are talking to a God whom they all share. If this were to develop further, people as individual human beings would begin to develop more and more what we already see nations manifesting in a terrible way. Although still speaking theoretically of the one God, they do not seriously want to recognize this divinity, especially now, for each nation wants to have its own God. This is what comes to the fore in a general way. In reality, every human being today wants to have his own God. And so he uses the term monotheism for the relationship he has with only his own angelos being. Since all relationships are dulled in a time when the aim is to develop abilities to see solely what is sense perceptible, people do not notice that things are as I have just described them. In speaking about concrete relationships between human beings and the spiritual world, to people who have not as yet taken note of any anthroposophical concepts, we find everywhere that they do not want to go into such things. They shy away from entering into this subject. They do not want to muster the courage to connect their thoughts with impulses that are said to come from the spiritual world. Something like this has always been the case in times of crisis, and we are now living in a time of crisis. With exceedingly painful feelings, we have to observe how inattentive today's humanity is as regards the tragic events of the present time, which speak so eloquently and clearly. How disinclined people are to pay proper attention to the events of the present time apart from being forced to take note of the material circumstances. People really do have to be forced to notice that what is going on during these years is everywhere presenting human souls with profoundly incisive impulses for humanity. This is why people have not listened when they have been shown, by whatever means, that important, decisive things must be thought and done by today's humanity in order to extricate itself from the miseries of the present time, and that the things that have to be thought and done must be born out of spiritual knowledge, out of concrete spiritual facts. Constantly emphasizing the spiritual in a general way, while going on and on about how human beings should deepen themselves spiritually and so on, none of this leads anywhere. What matters is that the people of today must win through to concrete relationships with the spiritual world. For us, it is understandable that in earlier ages, when they had stronger connections with the spiritual world, people's attention was drawn to those concrete connections, whereas nowadays these are no longer comprehended. In earlier ages, people did not yet indulge in generalized chatter about humanity milling around down here on the earth while something divine hovered about up above. People then talked in concrete terms. The most beautiful and meaningful outpourings of such concrete relationships are to be found in prophecies such as those of Daniel or of the Book of Revelation, which do not merely state, quote, "You human beings, you must put your trust in one God, you must believe in one God," close quote. Those writings tell of one kingdom, a second kingdom, a third kingdom, and how such kingdoms must follow one after the other. And they tell in concrete ways of the relationship of the spiritual world with the physical sense perceptible earth. But humanity today has completely lost the habit of speaking in such concrete ways about the relationship between the spiritual and the physical. Humanity today wants to apply the same yardstick to everything and invent theories according to which people all over the globe may be awarded the same standard of earthly happiness. Today's socialist thinks that certain ideas apply equally to human life in England, America, Russia, or Asia. If every state were to arrange its affairs as socialism prescribes, then the happiness which people everywhere dream about would automatically ensue. That is what people think. But these are abstractions, unreal concepts and ideas. Not knowing that one thing is prepared in one location on the earth by one particular people, while another is prepared at another location, not having the ability to comprehend the great difference between West and East, this is what must cause endless confusion and endless chaos. Only those who can build a bridge from their soul to the objective facts can work in a beneficial way to shape earthly existence. But people do not want to build this bridge. Again and again just now, an inner necessity compels me to speak to our friends in various places about a certain event that took place during the final third of the 19th century, one that is significant and deeply incisive for human evolution, an event known to all the various occult schools, although they are often not able to give a correct account of how the event ran its course. Today, once again, I want to mention briefly what it is about. From the year 1841 onward, a battle of spirits took place in spiritual realms between certain beings of the higher hierarchies and other beings who were above them. The beings who rebelled in the years between 1841 and 1879, and who fought a battle of rebellion during that period, had earlier been employed in a positive way by the wise guides of the universe. Beings who at one time are rebellious and evil and become spirits of darkness are, at other times, beings whose services are used for the good. So I am speaking here of beings who until 1841 were employed by higher beings in the service of the wise guides of the world, but who from then onward had aims that differed from those of the superior beings. These beings fought a significant battle in the spiritual world, one of those battles that take place quite frequently, though at various levels, a battle that in legend is symbolized by the Battle of Michael with the dragon. This battle ended in the autumn of 1879, with certain spirits of darkness being thrown down from the spiritual realms into the realm of the earth, since when they have been at work amongst human beings, entering into their will impulses, entering into their motivations, entering into whatever human beings can grasp in thought, in short, into everything connected with human beings. So, certain spirits of darkness have been amongst human beings since the autumn of 1879, and people must become aware of them if they are to understand earthly events. It is entirely correct to say that because these beings were thrown out in 1879, the heavens are now free of them, while the earth is full of them. The best way of describing what these beings wanted to achieve by means of their battle of rebellion from 1841 to 1879 is to say that they wanted to prevent the spiritual wisdom that must necessarily be revealed to human beings from the 20th century onward, from entering into human souls. They wanted to retain the spiritual wisdom within the spiritual world and not let it enter into human souls. The only way of ensuring that the human sense for spiritual knowledge would be opened up from the 20th century onward was to remove the impeding spirits of darkness from the spiritual realm so that the spiritual knowledge destined for human beings could come down. But now that those spirits of darkness are moving about amongst human beings here on earth, they are once again working to confuse people. Their aim now is to make sure that people fail to enter into the right relationship with the spiritual truths, so that the healing purpose of those truths is kept away from human beings. The only way of counteracting this is to apply clear recognition and understanding to these matters. But there are certain secret brotherhoods who have made it their task to work for the opposite of this. They want to have the wisdom only within their closest circle so that they can use it in the service of their own lust for power. This is the battle we are now fighting. On the one hand, there is the need to guide humanity in the right way by letting people take in the spiritual wisdom. On the other, there are the closed, secret brotherhoods of a nasty kind, whose very aim is not to let the wisdom enter into humanity, so that people will remain stupid and foolish as far as the spiritual world is concerned, while those within the closely guarded brotherhoods carry on their machinations from there. The events of the present time are full of whole bundles of these machinations, and it will be especially calamitous for humanity if people fail to recognize that such machinations are at work. You will feel as though a kind of light has been turned on regarding what is happening behind these matters when I tell you of certain truths, truths that, like ripe plums dropping from a tree, are meant to drop down out of the spiritual world into the human realm, but are being prevented from spreading also because people have presuppositions and misconceptions about them, and are afraid of them. I would like to speak about this in terms that are as concrete as possible. Important, significant consequences arise out of the fact that a number of spirits of darkness were thrown out in 1879, and have since dwelt in the human realm. The main consequence of this fact is that since then, thinking, clear thinking, has become immeasurably more important for human beings than was formerly the case. Never before has there been a time when clear thinking has been as necessary for human evolution as are eating and drinking for the preservation of the physical body. For if people think about clarity now in our time and on into the future, they will not be able to see in the right light those ripe truths that are to drop down from the spiritual world. Above all, they will not understand the great and profound significance for the whole of human evolution of the mystery of Golgotha, the appearance of Christ within the evolution of humanity. Many people talk about Christ Jesus, but to talk about the profound significance accorded to the whole of human evolution on the earth by the mystery of Golgotha, this is something that today's theology actually wants to prevent. There has, of course, only been a slow and gradual development of what is going to come about through the mystery of Golgotha, and it will only come to the fore in its full intensity during our present century. In olden times, there still existed faculties inherited from the ages when human beings had an atavistic inner life filled with spirituality. Only in our age has it become necessary for people to work at achieving spirituality, if this is what they want to have. That is why certain quite specific manifestations are arising in our time, in fact from 1879 onward. Because our outer vision has become so coarse, we can only see these things clearly when we look with the eyes of our soul into the realm which human beings enter after stepping through the gate of death. There we see that the manner in which souls born prior to 1879 re-enter the spiritual world after death is different from how all those souls will arrive back who have been born since 1879. This is a profoundly incisive event. This profoundly incisive event has the effect, especially, that in their souls, human beings become increasingly similar to their thoughts, to what they regard as their understanding of things. This may be a strange truth for the people of today, but it is a truth nevertheless. It is important and essential to see certain things in the right light, with clear thoughts, with valid thoughts, with thoughts imbued through and through with reality. To see Darwinism correctly, for example, as I endeavored to present it yesterday in a public lecture, this is good. But to see it as the basis for the only valid view of the world, to see it as meaning that only one thing is correct, namely that the human being is descended from the animals, to have the living thought about oneself, quote, I am descended from the animals, I have originated only out of the same forces that also form the animals, close quote. All this leads souls nowadays to resemble their own inner pictures. It is important to know this. When a soul like this has laid aside its body, it undergoes the misfortune of having to see itself as resembling its own inner pictures. Those who believe, while in the physical body, that only animal forces have played a part in their development, are building for themselves a consciousness after death with which they will have to perceive themselves as animals. For now that the event of 1879 is properly brought to fulfillment, the character of the fifth post-Atlantean age, the thoughts which human beings make for themselves serve to make human souls become transformed into these thoughts. That is why I said earlier that there is no need to have any particular preference for the spiritual science of anthroposophy in order to want to represent it. All one needs is sympathy with those who use such thoughts. These thoughts are creative thoughts in the life of the soul, because human beings are destined in the future to become what they regard themselves to be. This is something that had to come about during the course of wisely guided world evolution, so that the human being might really attain to a full and free consciousness of self. One aspect is that the gods had to give the human being the possibility of becoming his own creation. The other aspect is that in order for the human being to be able to give this self-created being a supersensible purpose, in order for him to be able to find in what he has made of himself something that can give him an eternal direction for the future, for this it was that Christ Jesus entered into the mystery of Golgotha. If one understands Christ Jesus through spiritual science, if one understands him in one's thoughts, then one can find the way to him, the way from the animal nature to the divine. This truth becomes especially evident to those who can look with the eyes of the soul into the realm which human beings enter after death. Those born before 1879 still take a certain remnant back with them, which protects them from becoming only what they were able to imagine while here on earth. And indeed, for some time to come, people will still be protected from becoming what they have imagined themselves to be. For these things only come into effect gradually. But paradoxically, this protection will only be made possible through suffering. It will only be possible if they can take upon themselves the suffering of knowledge, by which they themselves sense the unsatisfactory nature of their ideas about the human being. Harmony with oneself, coupled with knowledge that allows the human being to be human after death. This will only come about in the future if human beings become aware, while they are here in the physical body, of their true connections with the spiritual world. Those whose materialistic ideas still make them reject concrete spiritual knowledge today will take a long time before being able to accept that the year 1879 brought with it this kind of change. Yet it is necessary for such knowledge to be accepted. So you see how important it is, and how much more important it will become in the future, that the spiritual knowledge available should be allowed to spread throughout the earth. But meanwhile, in order to promote their affairs, the spirits of darkness will place a special emphasis on creating confusion amongst human beings, so that they fail to form the right thoughts into which they will be transformed after death. The human being has to become what he thinks himself to be. This is a truth that was destined to become known by human beings from the time in the 19th century onward, when those important changes came about. Human beings must will to be what they can in reality be. They must be able to think about their being if they are to be that being in their soul. Even today, those who have died will be able to announce as a rightful, mature truth, quote, "The soul is what it is able to think itself to be," close quote. Yet, since the time when it has become necessary to spread the truth, quote, the soul is what it is able to think itself to be, close quote, since that time, the spirits of darkness have managed to inspire into people what they represent as the truth, which is, quote, the human being is what he eats, close quote. Although the maxim, the human being is what he eats, is not recognized theoretically amongst the broader population, nevertheless, people live their lives in practice as though they do agree that the human being really is nothing more than what he eats. In fact, life as it is, lived in practice, is aiming more and more to bring this to the fore in outer life as well. More than anyone might believe, very much more than anyone might believe, the sad and tragic events of the present time have arisen as a consequence of the principle the human being is what he eats. In a far more profound sense than is realized by today's superficial way of thinking, it is these very lowly things that are causing so much blood to flow. Humanity has indeed been inoculated with the sentence, the human being is what he eats, and many battles are being fought about matters that are connected with such things. Especially for this reason, it is so necessary for thoughts that are fitting for our age to be spread about. Thought will gradually have to be recognized as a real soul force, rather than the pitiable abstraction which modern times have turned it into, and are now so proud of as well. In bygone ages, there was still an ancient heritage that linked humanity with the spiritual world. But, although that atavistic clairvoyance more or less vanished many centuries ago, the ancient heritage has still been present in the feeling and the will. But now the time has come when what is conscious must come more and more to the fore as a real force. And that is why in our time the spirits of opposition, the spirits of darkness, are rushing to the attack in order to counteract genuine thought with abstract thoughts in the form of all kinds of world programs. The connection between these things must be clearly seen. People must understand that the thought as such must become more and more real. There are still today so many people who say, quote, well, we shall see what comes after death. We'll find out about it all in good time. But there's no need to bother about it just now, when, while we serve life, once we enter that other world over there, we'll see quite clearly what it is like. Close quote. In fact, if the one thing is true, namely that over there we are what we have here imagined about ourselves, then there is also something else that is true. Consider a thought that is not at all rare today, when someone has died and left relatives behind. If the latter are perhaps not without thoughts, although tending to be materialistic, they cannot help having the thought that their dead relative is decaying in the grave, or that they still have what remains of him collected up in an urn or such like. Well, so long as people are without thoughts, they can be materialists and yet not have this belief. But if materialism triumphs, then people will increasingly believe all that is left of the dead person is decaying in the urn or in the grave. This thought is a real force. It is an untruth. If those left behind think that the dead person is no longer alive, and that he is no longer here, then this is an erroneous thought. But this erroneous thought is nevertheless real and actual in the souls of the people who think it. And the dead person perceives this real thought. He perceives it as something very significant for himself. It is not unimportant, but in fact profoundly important, if those who remain behind here cultivate in their living inner soul life the thought of the dead person continuing to live in the spiritual world, or if they merely give way to the lament, he's dead, that's all, he is decaying. These two things are not equally valid, but they are essentially very essentially different, for they are actually very essentially different. It is now scarcely possible to be here in Zurich without everywhere coming up against what people call analytical psychology, psychoanalysis, which is now being carried on everywhere, but especially strongly here. These psychoanalysts, it must be said, are now beginning to pay attention to matters of spirit and soul. They are beginning to think about spirit and soul because they are being so strongly confronted with this element. Readers aside, I would like to make this mention. This volume 178 that I'm reading does not have two of its lectures that are in the original Collected Works volume 178 in it, but I have recorded them, and I'm going to append them to this and make it a complete collected work, even though the book itself is not. And I just wanted to say that those two are on specifically psychoanalysis, just so you'll know that. End of readers aside, back to the book. I would here like to describe in a few words one particular feature of this psychoanalysis. Think of someone who suffers from hysterical symptoms. Hysterical symptoms are being especially noticed now because of the form they take these days. In any age, close attention is paid to those disorders that manifest particularly strongly in that age. People seek to find where the causes might lie. Well, psychoanalysis has now reached the point where it is saying that these hysterical symptoms, which manifest so frequently, have their causes in the soul. It cannot find the causes in the material realm, in the physiological or biological element, so they must lie in the soul realm. The favored place for seeking all kinds of causes for various hysterical symptoms lies, at present, in the subconscious soul realm. They say, quote, here is someone who manifests hysterical symptoms. They arise because what is at work in him lies not in his consciousness, but beneath the threshold of his consciousness, whence it keeps rising up like a subterranean wave, a subsolian wave. Close quote. This is the beginning of a dangerous game. The psychoanalysts search for all kinds of isolated, subterranean, hidden soul provinces, as they call it. In someone who is 30 years old, they look for aberrations in his seventh year, which were not lived through fully at that time. These must be brought back into his consciousness, because bringing things back into consciousness is supposed to heal, and so on. This is a game with extremely dangerous weapons. Out on the physical battlefield, people are today fighting with very dangerous weapons. But here, in many fields, a game is being played with weapons of knowledge that are no less dangerous, because people lack the will to deepen their knowledge through spiritual science in order to reach a real understanding of the symptoms that rise up before their souls. They tackle the matter with inadequate tools of knowledge. And that is a dangerous game. It is perfectly true to say that subconscious elements which fail to rise up into consciousness do play a part in many people nowadays. But what the psychoanalysts imagine they have found is, as a rule, the very least significant part. And that is why their successes in healing patients are, on the whole, rather questionable. When you find that a woman of 30 underwent some sort of sexual aberration in her 14th year, which was not fully lived through, so that the consequences continue to grow wildly and cause hysteria, what you have actually discovered is the most inconsequential aspect of the matter. In one case or another, what you discover might in fact be quite correct, but it will lead to even greater misunderstanding if its full import is not understood. One thing above all, though, is certainly true, and that is that countless subconscious elements do indeed haunt human beings today, and they are much harassed by these, and the diseases of civilization are caused by them. What is this? Consider what I have already said. The thought of the dead person who is no longer here lives in the soul. It lives somehow without the soul thinking about it much. It lives only because the soul is today still without thought. And the soul is rather sensitive with regard to such thoughtless thoughts. When this happens, the dead person is forced by eternal, universal laws to live with this thought. The dead person haunts the soul of the living person who has remained behind. The only way to counteract this is by knowing that the dead person lives. People on the physical plane will be more and more driven into soul illnesses by their lack of belief that the dead are alive. As a rule, it is not youthful sexual aberrations that bring about these diseases, but thoughts that do not believe. For in our time, thoughts are called upon to become real forces. They are called upon to become real forces, but not only forces that work for themselves. They work for themselves when after death the soul increasingly resembles what it imagined itself to be while it was in the body. But these thoughts become real forces in a higher sense as well, in that they even bind beings, in this case those who have died, in a wrong way to those who are still alive. The only way to counteract this is by maintaining as far as one can a connection with the one who has died, in that one regards him as continuing to live. This saves the relationship with the dead person from becoming a disaster, not only for oneself, who has remained behind, but also in some ways for the dead person, who is necessitated by an eternal, wisdom-filled law to haunt the one who has remained behind in a way that does not come to the consciousness of that person, but manifests purely in symptoms of disease. So what is the real remedy for many of the symptoms which psychoanalysts are encountering today? The remedy is to spread knowledge about the spiritual world. This is the universal remedy, the universal therapy, and not those individual therapies that are bestowed upon individual patients. So you see, life is calling on us not to think that while we are here we should pay attention only to physical life, while imagining that when we step through the gate of death, it will be soon enough to find out what kind of a world we shall discover there. For it is a fact that just as our life here is important for the life we shall enter between death and a new birth, so is the life of souls between death and a new birth important for the souls here. What I have been telling you is a thought. The thought of disbelieving the existence of those who have died. But the dead are and should be linked to the living by many bonds. And what I have been speaking about is only one of those bonds. There are also many other legitimate bonds which are needed to bring about the proper connections with the spiritual world. Spiritual science, the spiritual science of anthroposophy, searches for the right connections. The life human beings lead with one another here on the earth will only follow a correct course if people here on the earth enter into a proper relationship with the spiritual world. Otherwise, it will become more and more possible for individuals to become presumptuous and embark on machinations such as those I spoke of last Tuesday in order to gain power over others. There is one thing, especially, about which we must be clear. When we look toward the east, where just now the events that are happening are very intensive signs of something, we shall only gain an understanding of this if we gain inward clarity about the nature of what is there in the east. Look at what we have been saying for years about the inclinations of the eastern peoples in relation to the sixth post-Atlantean cultural age. This will bring clarity about all that is so confusing, which has come from the East, because out of what is happening now something quite different must develop, something it will not be easy to be so complacent about. The important thing to do is to find an entry in the right way into all those streams that are appearing just now and will continue to appear even more in the future. And the right entry can be found by pressing forward to knowledge about the spiritual world that can be discovered in the right way through spiritual science. In this way, too, the right relationship with the spiritual world can be found. Last time, I drew your attention to a wrong relationship with the spiritual world, which is being sought in a particular quarter. I told you that quite specific machinations were being used to dispatch people away from life here and up into the spiritual world in such a way that their life here had not been fully lived, so that they could still make use of certain forces once they had entered into the world in which we live between death and a new birth. Then certain unscrupulous brotherhoods, who only want to satisfy their own lust for power, can use mediums in order to bring into the world some specific knowledge that can come from those who have died once they have been given the possibility of acquiring such knowledge. These secret brotherhoods are, as a rule, also the ones that mislead people with regard to the most important matters to do with the spiritual world. I have told you that in November 1879, an important event took place, a battle between the forces of darkness and the forces of light, of which the outcome is depicted in the image of Michael and the dragon. What is important about this, however, is not the fact that I have told you about it, for this was an event that had to happen, an event that was predestined in world evolution, about which you can read in many different books, so that it is a truth that is not at all esoteric. The important thing is that I endeavor to make clear to you the true significance of what actually happened, and also the proper way in which human beings should relate to this event. That is what is important. The fact that this event was coming was known to Eliphas Levi, to Bader, to St. Martin, all of whom wrote about it. There is nothing at all esoteric about it. But in our time, there are ongoing efforts to create confusion about such events in people's heads. Perhaps so much confusion that human heads take such things to be nothing but superstition, and not real, even though knowledge about them has already been put about by older scholars who are in the know. That is why it is important to be given appropriate concepts about these things. Today there is a proper path along which one can approach the spiritual truths that have been seeping down into the physical world from the spiritual world. This proper path is the one shown by spiritual science. And if the stream of this spiritual science does not stray from the pure and genuine will, then it will lead people to a right relationship between the physical world and the spiritual world. But to attain what must be attained and brought to people is a strenuous business requiring effort. The comfortable attitudes people have today will have to be put aside, for effort is required. When one speaks about impulses that work down from the spiritual world and will also play a part in shaping the future, it happens repeatedly that people come who want specific information about one thing or another. Such people want to be told, for example, exactly what will come out of the present war in 1920. Such people fail to grasp that it is not permitted to burden the future by elaborating on every detail, but that, in spite of this, knowledge about the future can be absolutely certain, effective and certain, and that one must take account of it. It is so very difficult to make people understand this. Let me use an example to clarify this, since you are likely to say, "What does he mean?" On the one hand, he tells us that details are harmful to knowledge of the future, and on the other hand, he says one should listen carefully to this knowledge about the future, because it brings forward true things about the future. Close quote. I want to use a really simple example To show you what I mean, imagine a bad and a good chess player. A bad chess player will make bad moves. He will not do any good and will lose the game. A good player will have more opportunities and will win the game. The bad chess player simply makes wrong moves, while the good one makes the right moves at the right time. But does the good player waste his thoughts on working out in detail what moves his opponent might make later on? As a good player must, he knows now what moves his opponent will make in 2 hours? No, there is no need for him to know this. Yet even without this knowledge, his art of playing chess correctly and well does not remain without effect. When the future comes, he will do the right thing, because he has insight into what the right moves are, and he will do the wrong thing if he has no insight into what the right moves are. He cannot avoid facing up to the free will of his opponent. So you cannot ask, quote, what is the use of being able to play chess properly if the opponent is present? Close quote. In fact, there is a great deal of use in being able to play chess properly. If you think more profoundly about this comparison, I am sure you will discover what I mean. This comparison will also show you the relevance of what anyone who is knowledgeable about esoteric matters will tell you, that as soon as you derive the impulses for your actions in the physical world out of the spiritual world, you must, at that same moment, be prepared to be confronted by other spiritual powers, that you will have opponents with whom you will have to reckon, that there will be no free space where you can put everything into action. This is what is uncomfortable in these things. Get to know esoteric impulses, impulses that have been called down from the spiritual world, and then try, perhaps as a politician, to put them into practice. If you are a true contemporary of the present age, you will much prefer it if everything runs smoothly, if these impulses simply flow in while you regulate everything. But if you have effective spiritual impulses, especially esoteric impulses, which you want to apply in the physical world, you will everywhere have to reckon not only with the free will of people in this world, but also of higher beings. So as things stand today, you cannot reckon with finding a free space in front of you. You will have to realize that you will be working in a space that is already well filled. So the important thing is to get to know, through a genuine spiritual science, the right things, for example, about the nature of the sixth post-Atlantean cultural age, which is being prepared over in the East, and then to carry out the right esoteric impulse in each individual situation. Just as the chess player makes his moves according to the moves of his opponent, the important thing, really, is that one must learn to find a living entry into the spiritual world, and then do the right thing in each individual case. It is not simply overall abstract programs that are important, but a heightening of one's spiritual vitality, a continuous exercising of effort. People want abstract programs nowadays. They want to hear, stated in 5 sentences, what should be done all over the world. They want delegates to be sent from every state on earth who will meet in a world tribunal and vote on everything that is to happen all over the earth in accordance with an accepted norm. Yet the important thing to realize is that knowledge of the spiritual world is what is required of human beings, a continuous effort to make contact with the spiritual world. This, though, is linked with something else. It is linked with the fact that one has to reckon with the forces that are one's opponents and cannot simply rely on one's own powers. The opponents have to be reckoned with. But this has nothing to do with the idea of power. Impulses brought down from the esoteric world will be the right ones and will bring about what is right. And it will never be possible to use them in the service of power as such. That is impossible. What must one do? if one wants to work in the service of power factors as such. Let me read that again. What must one do if one wants to work in the service of power factors as such? One must try to gain knowledge about the future in an improper way, as I described last time, by dispatching people through death in a manner that enables them to retain the use of earthly powers and then getting them to impart what is to happen through mediums. In this way, certain secret brotherhoods have gained some portions of knowledge about the relationship of the West to the East, and all kinds of machinations have been set in train which are functioning in accordance with that knowledge. For knowledge that is placed at the disposal of the lust for power seeks to attain something entirely specific. The honest, proper acquisition of esoteric impulses only puts into practice what takes account also of the engelos being of each individual living person. One knows that every individual with regard to whom one is using esoteric impulses is also a soul who has a relationship with the spiritual world. One regards such a one as a living being. The way in which the West ought to be treating the East should everywhere involve being open to the possibility of reckoning with the living partners, the angels who protect each individual human being. But this is irksome. Those others want to get rid of this influence by means of Ahrimanic powers, so that power alone can hold sway on this side. But such a thing can only be brought about by gaining possession of the impulses for the future in the wrong way, as I described last time. Our age is suffering immensely from the way impulses gained in the manner described are playing a part in the events that happen. The whole task of those who seek the truth in an honest way today involves, in the first place, the duty to convince oneself that impulses in the bad sense do exist, and to convince oneself that the only way to work into the future in the right way is through finding the right impulses in the proper way by the path of spiritual science. Dear friends, you can see from this that to serve spiritual science is not a one-sided matter, for it is a service rendered by both the living and the dead. It is an earnest matter. What I wanted to do just now, when our friends here in Zurich are preparing to bring spiritual science into suitable circles, was to speak within our society here about those earnest matters of spiritual knowledge in recent and present times. It is noticeable, even within our society, how various opposing powers are at work. Only consider what has been going on, roughly since this war began, by way of defamations and accusations of the will, which I and others are experiencing. In this, too, opposing powers are obviously playing their part. From the way we have been speaking during these considerations, it will have become clear to you that our time needs a renewal of its spiritual life, and that it needs people to wake up from a kind of sleeping state. Again and again we meet people who think, quote, "Well, now there is a war, but after that peace will come, and then the matter will be done with," close quote. But this is not how things are. The things that are happening today are significant signs, but they are incomprehensible to anyone who does not want to deepen his soul life through spiritual science. And because the times are so serious, because it will become more and more difficult to fight even the kind of battle our friends here have fought in order to make such functions as this one possible, I want to mention this circumstance especially, and in this case also with my utmost gratitude. I want to mention it with gratitude on the one hand, out of the mood of spiritual science, and on the other, because our dear friends here in Zurich have taken up the battle against unfavorable circumstances so kindly and with such energy, and have not spared themselves any effort to make these lectures possible under these very unfavorable circumstances. So the fine aim these Zurich friends set themselves has been realized, even though it will become increasingly difficult to organize such events owing to the increasing resistance of these times. I especially want to mention the fact that these difficulties will continue to increase more and more. So we must realize that we shall have to make the best use in the near future of the time we can still fight for in which to put on our lectures. And that is why I wanted to express these thanks to our dear Zurich friends, who have made the greatest efforts to enable both the public and the branch lectures to take place. Later, when we look back over these things, we will surely realize how significant it is that we have been able to be together and speak together in this way, just at the present time, when such tragic events are taking place in the world. So, let us continue to work in the sense of the spiritual scientific impulse, and endeavor to do whatever can be wrested from the difficult circumstances of this time in the conviction which can arise in us out of a true understanding of spiritual science, that in the great stream of today's tragic and devastating events, we are doing something very important and incisive for this age. What we are doing is something that is flowing into the stream of events. That this is happening may not be very obvious just now, but it is significant nonetheless. If this thought can imbue us, then it will give us the strength to carry on. This thought will have the strength within it to send out beams into our time in the right way. Such thoughts must be absorbed and accepted by our time. Let us live in this conviction as though in an atmosphere of spirit. It can come to us out of spiritual science if we understand this spiritual science in the right way. Let us remain together in this sense, my dear friends. The end of Lecture 4.